need to keep a few things in mind. Number one, understand that as you age, it'll become more and more difficult for you to be involved with the property. Your hands and mind will not work the same way, and it would be a pity to lose everything you've worked so hard for at the end of your life. So be sure to structure your investments in such a way that they become 99.9% passive for you later on in life. This means either owning properties that require little involvement, like commercial real estate, or using property managers to take care of your properties for you. You may also decide to trade up to easier to manage properties, which I'll talk about in a moment when I discuss the 1031 exchange. And number two, if you plan to hold onto your properties forever, be sure to consult with some expert asset protection lawyers who can structure your rental business in such a way that taxes will be minimal or non-existent for your descendants. Now, what if you don't want to simply keep your properties forever? One common tactic many investors use to keep the cash flow flowing without the day-to-day management of tenants is selling with seller financing. Seller financing. Once you pay your property off and no longer have a bank loan, you can easily transition to the role of the bank and sell your property using seller financing. In other words, the same strategy I explained in Chapter 13 in the discussion on creative ways to finance your rental, you can use to sell your rental. Seller financing has a few key benefits over a regular sale. Number one, possibly a higher sales price. When selling a property with seller financing, you may be able to get a higher sales price because the buyer is more concerned about the terms they can get. Secondly, a lower tax bill. If you were to sell the property outright, you might be hit with a huge tax bill. But instead, with seller financing, you only pay on the income you actually receive in a given year. And third, ongoing passive income. Although selling all your properties and suddenly having $1 million in the bank might feel nice, that money will only last so long. By selling using seller financing, you turn that equity you have into passive monthly income that will last you long into retirement. If you plan to use seller financing, just be sure to hire a lawyer and do your homework because there are numerous laws that must be followed as well as some general best practices that are beyond the scope of this book. Also, the person you sell to matters, so screen them carefully and require a sizable down payment. Cash out. At some point, you could also simply cash in your chips and exit the real estate game for good. Sell the properties you have, pay the hefty tax bill, and move your money into a savings account, stock market, or another passive investment. Or you could use that money to become a private lender or a hard money lender, assisting other real estate investors in building their dreams while you collect good interest on a secured asset that you understand, having been in the game for many years. Now, finally, let's talk about one of the most common strategies real estate investors use to build wealth, the 1031 exchange. Although this isn't necessarily an exit strategy only, I feel it fit best in this chapter because ultimately, the 1031 exchange can save you millions of dollars in taxes and ensure your wealth is transferred to your heirs with the least possible taxation. The 1031 exchange. If you decide to sell a rental property at some point, you'll need to pay taxes on that gain. Bummer. This might not be a big deal if you're a terrible investor or has some bad luck that kept you from achieving any good financial gain, but I hope that instead, you are a smart real estate investor and successful. You've read Bigger Pockets after all, and you aren't going to make some measly profit or sell it at a loss. You will rock this game and make some serious moolah when you sell, right? In short, you will have so much cash that you'll need to get yourself some bigger pockets. See what I did there? But then, Uncle Sam is going to come knocking for his piece of the pie. And trust me, he's got quite an appetite. But don't fret, I've got some good news. The IRS wants to partner with you on that profit by allowing you to do a 1031 exchange. Seriously? Partner? With the IRS? Yep, through a 1031 exchange. A 1031 exchange is a tax strategy so named because of its inclusion in Section 1031, 1031, of the IRS tax code. It is also commonly known as a Starker exchange or a like-kind exchange. In essence, a 1031 exchange allows an investor to defer paying any taxes on the profit of a property when it is sold, as long as another like-kind asset is purchased using the profit received. Now, I'll explain exactly what that means in just a moment, but let's cover the big picture first. First, understand that a 1031 exchange is not just for real estate, though that is how it's most commonly used. In reality, a person could use a 1031 exchange to defer taxes on numerous asset types, from paintings, businesses, to cattle, to automobiles, but given that this book is specifically about real estate, we'll keep focused on that. I mentioned that the IRS wants to partner with you. Now, the IRS doesn't come right out and say that anywhere, but in a way, that's exactly what they're doing. When you make money, you must pay taxes on that income. But if you follow the strict rules of a 1031 exchange, the IRS is basically telling you, in this whiny, nasally voice, of course, hey, you've been obviously doing pretty well with your real estate things, so why don't you hang on to our money for a little while and reinvest that in your next deal? This will help you make more money next time, and we'll get an even bigger share down the road. Unless, of course, after that, you want to partner again on another deal. That is what I mean by deferred taxes. The taxes will still be due someday, unless you die before you pay, but I'll discuss that scenario later. But until that point, it can be extremely advantageous to keep using what would otherwise be the government's money to invest in properties. In addition to the government partnering with you, the entire U.S. tax system is designed to encourage particular behaviors in society by rewarding or penalizing people for certain actions. In this case, the U.S. government rewards real estate investors because we are providing housing for the masses. The logical reason for the 1031 exchange makes sense. After all, if you make $100,000 on a property and then use that $100,000 to buy another property, you are clearly not out spending your $100,000 on shiny new toys. In fact, as I'll discuss in a minute, the money never even touches your bank account after the sale of the property, but it is instead held by an intermediary. So the IRS, in all its benevolence, has decided to be fair and not require us to pay those taxes yet. Nice guys, the IRS, right? Well, maybe. I'll get to that. In addition to tax savings, the 1031 exchange offers several other benefits. It can allow a real estate investor to shift the focus of their investing without incurring the tax liability. For example, perhaps you are investing in properties that are low income and thus high maintenance. You could exchange the high maintenance investment for a low maintenance investment without needing to pay a significant amount of taxes. Or perhaps you want to move your investment from one location to another without the IRS knocking. The 1031 makes it possible. To illustrate how a 1031 works in the real world, let me share a few examples. 1031 exchange examples. Because 1031 exchanges can be slightly complicated, I want to share stories from a couple of BiggerPockets members who used the 1031 exchange to defer a lot of money on the recent sales of their real estate investments. Example 1. In July of 2013, Jason Mack purchased an 81-unit apartment building in Riverside, California. Paying $3.1 million for the property, he immediately set out to improve the property. He evicted bad tenants and improved management efficiencies while also enhancing the physical condition of the property, including a new roof, painting, landscaping, installing an elevator, and performing other valuable refinements. After increasing occupancy from 60% to 95% and stabilizing the entire operation, Jason sold the property for $5.5 million in the spring of 2015. Overall, he netted a final profit of $2 million on the two-year apartment turnaround. Had Jason simply sold the deal, he would have needed to pay close to $600,000 in capital gains tax. But he knew better. Jason used a 1031 exchange to parlay his cash profit into two new properties, a 24-unit apartment building and an upscale office building. Although he reduced the number of units he managed by doing so, Jason was able to buy nicer properties in significantly better locations that will be easier to manage and increase his ability to grow his wealth. Example number 2. In 2012, Serge Shukat, whom we've interviewed twice on the BiggerPockets podcast, episodes 60 and 131, purchased a newer single-family home for $70,000 located in Casa Grande, Arizona. The home was a foreclosed property that quickly climbed in value. When Serge sold the home 2 years later for $135,000, he cleared almost $60,000 in profit. According to Serge, he would have had to pay close to $15,000 in capital gains tax, plus an additional $3,000 or so for the recapture of depreciation, which we'll talk about later. Instead, Serge spent $600 on the 1031 exchange process and was able to roll his entire profit into the purchase of a newer, larger single-family home and a 2006 mobile home on an acre of land. Essentially, he turned that $1,000 a month investment into two that grossed $1,950 per month with no taxes due. 1031 exchange rules. If you plan to use a 1031 exchange, understand that you must follow some pretty strict rules set by the government. If you don't, you won't get the tax-deferred exchange. It is as simple as that. So let's talk about those 1031 exchange rules now. Number 1, the like-kind stipulation. The IRS requires that the property being sold, the relinquished property, and the property being acquired, the replacement property, be like-kind assets. In other words, you can't trade a car dealership for a rental house because they're different kinds of assets. However, you can exchange almost any other type of investment real estate for any other type of investment real estate. For example, you can exchange a duplex for an apartment complex. You can exchange a piece of raw land for a rental house. You can exchange a vacation rental property for a strip mall. Also, keep in mind that the property must be an investment, not your primary or secondary home. In addition, both properties must be located within the United States to qualify. And sorry, house flippers, properties that are designed for quick purchase and resale don't count. Number two, required value of the replacement property. For you to be able to completely avoid paying any taxes on the sale of your property, the IRS requires that the replacement property acquired be of equal or greater value than the property being relinquished, though that value could be spread out over multiple properties. For example, let's say you have a property that you are going to sell for $1 million. To get the full benefit of the 1031 exchange, you must buy at least $1 million worth of like-kind real estate. That could be an apartment complex costing more than $1 million, or maybe four different properties of $250,000 each, or it doesn't matter. Also, note that the acquisition costs, such as inspections, escrow fees, and commissions, do count towards the total cost of the replacement property. Technically, you could carry out a partial 1031 exchange and actually purchase something of lower value, but you would need to pay taxes on the difference. For example, if the relinquished property is sold for $1 million and you purchased a new property through the 1031 exchange for $900,000, you would need to pay the normal capital gains tax or taxes on the $100,000 difference. This extra $100,000 is known as boot. Finally, understand that when I talk about the sales price of the relinquished property, I'm talking about the entire sales price, not just the profit you made. In other words, let's say you purchased a piece of rental property for $100,000 and later sold it for $200,000. The replacement property or combined properties would need to be greater than $200,000, not just the $100,000 profit you made. Now that you understand the price range, it's time to start looking for a replacement property, and you better hurry up. Which brings us to point number three, the 45-day identification window. The IRS imposes a very strict timeline on identifying the property you plan to buy, 45 days. That's right. You must identify the property you plan to close on within 45 days or lose the entire benefit of the 1031 exchange. If you are an experienced investor, you probably recognize that this is not a lot of time to find a property, especially in today's hot real estate market. Sometimes I'll go 6 months without buying a property simply because I can't find any deal worth buying. I think this is a great indication that the creators of the rule didn't invest in real estate. But the 45-day rule is unlikely to change anytime soon, so understand that the day you sell your relinquished property, the clock begins ticking. Of course, you will likely have more time than just 45 days to begin looking, because the timer doesn't start until the day you sell the property. You will probably list your property for sale several months before closing, so if you are confident that you want to do a 1031 exchange, start looking for deals long before your property is officially sold. Ideally, the day you list the property for sale would be the day you begin your search, or, as my friend Serge Shukat told me, consider selling an asset using the 1031 exchange after you find a new deal to purchase. Also, keep in mind that you can also negotiate a long escrow period on the property you are selling, giving you more time before the countdown begins. In addition to adhering to the countdown the IRS places on real estate investors, you must follow some strict procedures in this process. For example, you are allowed to officially identify three potential deals, which is helpful in case the first one doesn't work out. If you only identify one deal and something happens later in the due diligence period, you might miss out on the entire 1031 exchange. However, if you're thinking you can just identify a ton of properties, hold your horses. The IRS generally allows you to identify up to three potential replacement properties, but no more. Now, a few exceptions to the rule do exist, known as the 95% rule and the 200% rule. These exceptions state that you can identify more than three properties, but you are required to actually purchase 95% of those you identify, or the combined total cost of all those identified properties must be less than 200% of the sales price of your relinquished properties. For example, if you formally identify 20 different potential properties, you would either have to purchase 19 of those, 95% of the 20, or the combined value of all 20 would need to be less than 200% of your sales price. I'm sure you can imagine the difficulty in both these scenarios, but because they're exceptions to the rule, they're seldom used. What exactly does identifying a property mean? This is what the IRS says on the point. The identification must be in writing, signed by you, and delivered to a person involved in the exchange, like the seller of the replacement property or the qualified intermediary. However, notice to your attorney, real estate agent, accountant, or similar persons acting as your agent is not sufficient. Once you have identified the property or properties, you'll need to move forward with closing on those properties because another timer will have already begun ticking, the 180-day closing window. Number four, the 180-day closing window. We discussed earlier that the clock for the 45-day window starts ticking the moment a relinquished property is sold. At the same moment, another clock begins, known as the 180-day closing window, and it begins counting down quickly. The IRS requires that the new replacement property be fully purchased, so the title officially transferred, within 180 days of the sale of the relinquished property. This rule, along with the 45-day rule, is strictly enforced, and your entire 10th year-end exchange will fail if you do not adhere to both rules. Number five, the necessity of an intermediary. Finally, one of the most important rules governing the entire 10th year-end exchange process is this. You may not touch the money of the relinquished property profit if you hope to avoid the taxes. Although you may have up to 180 days between the sale of the relinquished property and the purchase of the replacement property, the proceeds profit may never enter your bank account or an account controlled by you. Instead, you must use a qualified intermediary. An intermediary is someone who holds onto your money while you wait to buy the new property. Of course, a lot of people out there would love to hold onto your money for you, but I would recommend using a qualified intermediary, also known as an accommodator. Hundreds of different companies can serve this role for you, as a quick Google search will reveal. I recommend going with an established company that has a long history and a solid reputation to avoid fraud and other unfortunate situations. Also, keep in mind that although the IRS doesn't specifically state what a qualified intermediary is, they do define what a qualified intermediary is not. A qualified intermediary cannot be you, your agent, your broker, your spouse, your family member, your investment banker, your employee, your business associate, or anyone who has had one of these roles in the previous 2 years. How to do a 1031 exchange step by step. At this point, we've covered all the dirty details about 1031 exchanges. So let's put it all together and walk through step by step the process for carrying one out. Be aware that the following is just a general outline, so specific deals will likely vary slightly from this process. Step one, decide to sell and do a 1031 exchange. Not every purchase is worth doing a 1031 exchange on. After all, with all the requirements, closing costs, and countdown timers, simply paying the tax and moving on may be advantageous. This is definitely a discussion for you to have with your accountant. Number two, list your property for sale. You then list your property for sale as you ordinarily would. Your agent would likely include language in the listing paperwork regarding your desire to do a 1031 exchange and the buyer's willingness to play along. Number three, begin looking for replacement properties. Remember, the moment you relinquish property is sold, the 45-day countdown begins. Therefore, you should begin looking for deals immediately. Number four, find a qualified intermediary. Look for someone professional with a good reputation. Number five, negotiate and accept an offer. When someone agrees to buy your property, you'll need to make sure the paperwork clearly states that a 1031 exchange is taking place on your end and the buyer will need to comply. Although the buyer does not need to do a lot of work, they may need to sign off on certain paperwork, such as an assignment or a disclosure. Number six, close on the sale of your relinquished property. The title company or attorney will handle the closing, as with any other real estate transaction, except that your qualified intermediary will be actively involved in the process and the funds will transfer to their bank account, not yours. Number seven, identify up to three properties within 45 days. Now is the time to officially designate the properties you might pursue. Keep in mind, you can identify up to three properties or more if you close on 95% of them or the total combined value of the identified properties is less than 200% of the sales price of your relinquished properties. Number eight, sign a contract on the first choice property. Most likely, of the three properties you identify, one will stand out as your first choice. You will need to get that property under contract and open escrow, making sure the seller knows you are purchasing through a 1031 exchange. You could also go under contract on all three of your identified properties, using contingency clauses to back out on the ones you later decide not to pursue. Number 9. Let your qualified intermediary work with the title company. You, your agent, and your qualified intermediary will work with the title company or closing attorney to make sure to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. This is actually a fairly simple process with which your qualified intermediary should be familiar. Number 10, close on the replacement property. Finally, the qualified intermediary will wire your money over to the title company or attorney, and the property will close as in a normal transaction, deferring your need to pay the taxes until some point in the future, if ever. The beauty of the 1031 exchange is that you can repeat this process over and over and over on properties and continue deferring taxes indefinitely. This can help you build some serious wealth over time, greater than if you would simply pay the taxes each time. How a 1031 exchange can make you millions. In this section, I'll present the timeline for two different investors who bought and sold properties over a 35-year span. The investors in both scenarios start with the same amount of money, $50,000, buy the same property, a $250,000 deal, have the same growth, 5% equity growth each year, and reinvest their profits as a 30% down payment on their next deal. But each ends up with a very different amount because of the taxes. Now, for simplicity, in this example, I'm not going to include closing costs, depreciation, loan paydown, cash flow, or other obvious sources of income and expenses in these diagrams. This is simply to illustrate a point. Now, to see these figures for yourself, which will make this audio make much more sense, go to www.biggerpockets.com/rentalbookfigures and look for figure 14 and figure 15. In figure 14, investor number one purchased a $250,000 property with his $50,000 down payment. After 5 years, he sold it for $319,070.39. He was able to use the entire profit and his equity he'd built so far to put a 30% down payment on his next deal. This continued for 25 years with no tax due because he continually used the 1031 exchange. At the end, he ended up with $3,829,471.79 in equity. Now, let's take a look at the numbers for investor number two, who chose not to use the 1031 exchange. See figure 15 at biggerpockets.com/rentalbookfigures. After 25 years, investor number two ended up with just less than $2.5 million. Although this is still a respectable sum of money, notice that this investor trails investor number one by more than $1 million. This is because investor number one was able to put the government's money to work by using a 1031 exchange, helping him build greater wealth. Now, what happened to investor number one at the end of year 25? After all, the 1031 exchange is simply a method of tax deferral, not tax avoidance. Or is it? So let's talk about that next. The 1031 exchange endgame. In our examples, investor number one ended year 25 with $3.8 million, while investor number two ended with $2.4 million. But what happens after that? Typically, there are two common scenarios for any real estate investor when they are done with their investment career. Number one, they could cash out. Some investors decide to exit the real estate game entirely, cashing in their chips and walking out the door. In other words, they decide that they will pay the IRS what is owed after selling all their properties. However, at this point, they are not simply paying the taxes on that final property's profit, but to put it very simplistically, they're paying the taxes on all the property's profits for which they've ever used the 1031 exchange. Because the cost basis of the property is carried forward on every deal, that final tax bill will likely be exceptionally large. Keep in mind that if you opt for this endgame strategy, cashing in your investments and paying the tax, you will still likely have significantly more income than if you had paid taxes each time you sold the property. Now, option number two of the 1031 exchanges, they can die and pass it all on. That's right. Many investors simply choose to hold their properties until the day they die and to pass the properties on to their heirs. The benefit of this approach is that current inheritance laws allows the heirs to receive the property on a stepped up basis, which means that tax consequences virtually disappear. For example, let's say the adjusted basis on a property after numerous 1031 exchanges and a lot of time, is $200,000, and the property is worth $3 million. If the owner sold the property 5 minutes before dying, they would owe taxes on the $2.8 million in gain. But if the estate passes to the investor's heirs, the basis is automatically bumped up to the fair market value, or $3 million. The heirs could then sell the property and pay little, if any, tax. Of course, there are special rules and fine print that accompany this, especially for the exceptionally wealthy. So be sure to talk with a qualified professional about your estate planning. Understandably, not every investor wants to hold on to properties until they die. I know I don't want to be dealing with tenants when I'm 40 years old, so being a 100-year-old landlord is absurd. So how does one get around this? You do it by trading up into properties that are significantly easier to manage. For example, perhaps you could 1031 exchange your equity into a multi-million dollar shopping mall as part of a syndication with hundreds of other investors. Or maybe trade it into a triple net lease investment where the tenant pays everything and you sit back and collect a check. There are hundreds of ways to make money with real estate, so simply trading up to a more passive method sounds pretty good to me. Final thoughts on the 1031 exchange. I've just spent multiple pages giving you more information about 1031 exchanges than you probably ever wanted to know. You should probably feel proud. You now know more about the 1031 exchange than 99% of the US population. Hopefully by now, you have all the knowledge you need to decide whether a 1031 is right for you, and if so, how to accomplish such a task. The 1031 exchange may be slightly complicated, but the long-term benefits of using the tax loophole can pack a tremendous punch in helping create your future wealth and should be considered by all serious real estate investors who are in this game for the long haul. But remember, if you are considering a 1031 exchange in your future, please speak with a qualified tax professional about your options. Wrapping it up. Real estate investing is an exciting game, but it's a means to an end. Whatever your goals are in life, I sincerely hope real estate investing can help you achieve them. And once you have reached your goals, you will need to decide where to go next. Onward and upward, or retirement on the beach with your loved ones? The choice of how you liquidate your assets will be one you'll need to make with careful consideration and planning, which can begin right now. Like Alexander the Great and the fall of the Macedonian Empire, you don't want your real estate empire to fall apart someday because of poor planning. So begin looking at your future today and decide how you will best exit the game safely, securely, and financially whole. Chapter 20, Final Thoughts. Jim Henson once said, "Life is like a movie. Write your own ending. Keep believing. Keep pretending." Over the past 100,000 words or so, we've gone on a journey that began with just changing the way you thought about real estate, then progressed through the process of building a plan, networking, and eventually buying your deal and managing it effectively. I hope you now have all the tools you need to begin building your rental property portfolio so you can achieve everything you could ever want in life. But this isn't over just yet. In this final chapter, I want to talk about the rest of your life as a rental property owner. After all, simply finding and acquiring great properties is not enough to give you long-lasting success. You must live successfully to maintain that level and grow over time. So let's talk about what comes next in your life after the acquisition in a section I'll call the 5 success principles of rental property ownership. I believe these 5 principles will help you continue to achieve your goals with rental properties until the day you exit the game forever. The 5 success principles of rental ownership. The character of Uncle Ben from the Spider-Man comics and movies once said, "With great power comes great responsibility." Although he may have been giving Spider-Man advice on kicking bad guys' backsides, the same principle applies to real estate investors. You stumbled upon something incredibly powerful when you decided to get into real estate investing. Most of your family and friends will never flip the switch in their head to take control of their financial destiny. In much of the world, even those who know about the power of real estate couldn't even do anything about it. But you are incredibly blessed with great power, which means you've got some responsibilities now. Maybe you don't feel yet that you are successful, and that's okay. If you cultivate these habits now, they can help you develop into the kind of investor who is successful. Fake it till you make it, right? Therefore, the following are the 5 responsibilities every rental property owner must maintain throughout their investing life if they want to maintain success. Number 1, manage effectively. The first responsibility you'll have as you become an experienced real estate investor is to manage your portfolio effectively. Whether you have a property manager in place or you manage your own tenants yourself, you are still a manager. Owning a rental property is a lot like walking a tightrope. You need to keep walking on that thin line, and when a gust of wind comes from the left, you must lean to the right so you balance yourself and don't fall off. In your rental property business, gusts of wind can take many forms. Thieving employees, bad property managers, natural disasters, fires, economic depressions, and other such factors can throw your investing off kilter and force you to step in and maintain stability. Don't assume that just because you own some rentals that you can sit back and relax on a beach 365 days a year. Yes, the goal may be financial freedom, but that freedom requires some ongoing work. Number two, increase income. As you move through your investment life, one of your tasks will be to increase the income your rental properties generate. And I'm not talking about just raising the rent, though that is obviously the largest aspect of increased income. First, you need to ensure that your property is always being rented at the market rate, not below. Maybe you think that by offering below market rent, you'll deal with less drama, which might be true, but how much are you really sacrificing? This becomes increasingly problematic the more units you have. If you own 50 units and each one is under market by just $25, that's $1,250 a month you're missing out on, or $15,000 per year. At a 10% cap rate, that's $150,000 in value you're not receiving just because of $25 a month. Of course, you must also be cognizant of being priced too high. Just as I advocate raising rent to stay current, you must be quick to decrease the rent if needed to fill units. As I mentioned at other times in this book, vacancy will be one of your biggest cash flow killers, and keeping your rent competitive is the easiest way to keep vacancy rates down. It may be a bit of a balancing act, but learning to maximize your income is incredibly important for your entire investment life. Number three, decrease expenses. Another task you'll need to continually stay on top of is decreasing expenses. I'm not saying you should spend all your time pinching pennies, and some landlords take this way too far. You shouldn't sacrifice your tenants' right to quiet enjoyment of their property just because you want to save some money. However, you can cut costs in numerous other ways as a landlord, such as the following. Transferring the responsibilities of certain utility payments like water, garbage, electricity to the tenant. Switching your garbage pickup to a larger can with fewer collections. Negotiating lower rates with vendors in exchange for long-term contracts or exclusivity. Switching to energy-efficient appliances when you are responsible for paying the electricity. Switching to low-floor toilets and implementing other water-saving techniques to keep the water bill down if you are responsible for paying it. Shopping around for better insurance rates. Challenging your property tax bill if you feel it is too high. These are just some ways you can decrease expenses as a rental property investor. No one else will likely do these tasks for you, but small changes can sometimes result in a massive boost to your bottom line. Number four, execute your plan. In chapters 2 and 3, I talked about building a plan and compared investing in real estate without a plan to the act of driving across the country without a roadmap. Hopefully you've created a plan for yourself and have a goal for where you want to go. However, just having a plan is not enough. Now you need to carry it out. I recommend reviewing your goals on a daily basis and monitoring your progress on a monthly basis. In other words, if your goal is to achieve $1 million in net worth, where are you right now? On episode 113 of the Bigger Pockets podcast, real estate investor and author Jay Papasan described how keeping track of his net worth daily has made the greatest impact on his life and his investing. Smart dude. Your plan will likely change over the course of your career, as it should. Life happens and it can throw curveballs into your plan. Kids are born, natural disasters happen, your physical abilities slow down, and you become increasingly aware of your own mortality. These things can all play a role in your plan. However, a goal without a plan is just a wish, and even if your plans change, keep working it and don't give up. Number five, give back. Finally, I believe that every investor has a duty and obligation to give back to others regardless of the level of success they've achieved so far. Now, you can give back in multiple ways, but I encourage you to look at giving back both educationally and financially. First, educationally. You might have just purchased your very first deal, but that puts you miles ahead of 90% of the rest of the population who have never owned a real estate investment. So give back and share what you've learned. And that honestly is the spirit of the Bigger Pockets community, where people from all different experience levels can share, learn, and grow together. So tell your story, help others, and encourage them to achieve the success that you've seen thus far. And financially, I believe strongly in giving back financially. If life has rewarded you, I feel you should give back financially to help those with fewer opportunities than you. Do some research and find an organization with whom you can trust your money to make a difference in the world. Not only is this good for the world, it's also good for your heart, helping keep you grounded and focused on the things in life that really matter. It's really easy for real estate investors to get so focused on money and success that they lose sight of the bigger picture. And you don't need to be a millionaire to start giving back. Do it today. I'd recommend starting with giving away 10% of your income to a good cause and see where that takes you. You'll never get to the end of your life and say, "Boy, I wish I hadn't given back so much." Cultivate an attitude right now of generosity in yourself and become the kind of person who contributes to society. After all, much of the success you've achieved in life was facilitated by someone else giving back and helping to pave the way for you. And now it is your turn to pay it forward. Will you take action? Let me end this book by asking you a very simple question. What do you wish you had in life? A new car? A nicer house? More time to spend with family? An early retirement? More time and money to travel? Less time spent at work? These may be great things to desire for your life, but just wishing for them is not enough. As I originally noted in the prologue of this book, Michael Jordan once said, "Some people want it to happen, some wish it would happen, and others make it happen." Now, what kind of person are you? You've just read an entire book, or listened to an entire book, on the step-by-step method for building wealth through real estate. You've learned how to get your mind in the right place. You've learned how to make a plan that will help you reach your financial goals. You've learned how to find properties that best meet your criteria and how to analyze those deals to make sure they make sense. Finally, you've learned how to finance those properties and, once purchased, how to manage them to make sure they continue to operate at peak performance for you. I've poured my heart and soul into this book and given you every single piece of information that I know about real estate investing. I've told you stories about other investors who have found success through real estate, and you have access to the Bigger Pockets community, including the incredible Bigger Pockets forums, where you can reach out anytime if you have questions or concerns about your next step. In other words, you've been given every single piece of the puzzle handed to you on a silver plate. But there's still one thing missing. Action. Without action, you are just another book reader. Without action, you're just another entrepreneur. Without action, you are just a wisher, a dreamer. Without action, you are destined to continue down the same path as everyone else. Without action, you are stuck. Books are great, and you've taken an important and valuable step in listening to this one. Hopefully, you'll pass it on to a friend or go back and re-listen, this time with a highlighter and pen in hand, if that was possible with an audiobook. Still, a book is just a stack of papers or a collection of MP3s, wrapped in cardboard and covered in ink. It's what you do with the information in it that matters. So take action. Don't sit on the bench while others take the field. Get out there and make it happen. Don't wish, don't want it, do it. This has been the book on rental property investing, how to create wealth and passive income through smart buy and hold real estate investing. Written by Brandon Turner, narrated by Brandon Turner. Copyright 2015 by Bigger Pockets Publishing, LLC. Production copyright 2015 by Bigger Pockets Publishing, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.